Thanks for joining us for the Digital Leaders Podcast. Our guest today is Aldridge Joseph, who is a Web3 content creator and a community builder. Aldridge was an early investor in Gary Vee's NFT project, and that was the catalyst for his content creation journey. Aldridge joins us to discuss strategies for community building, as well as what it takes to quit your job and become a full-time content creator, something I know many of us would love to do. Oh, it looks like Aldridge is ready. Let's get started.
I guess I'll call myself a Web3 content creator and a builder, I guess. And what I mean by that is, so I create content in the Web3 space. So that's NFTs, the metaverse, cryptocurrency. And I kind of build frameworks and objective systems so people can make better investment decisions and kind of build a community around that. So I give frameworks that I live by and I share that with my community.
Nice. Aldridge, it's great to have you on the show. The audience really loves it. Yeah, for sure. The audience really loves it when we bring in digital creators. So I know everyone is definitely going to enjoy hearing some of your story. And I definitely wanted to get into your experiences as a creator. But before we get to that, I know a lot of your content focuses on NFTs and Web3. Mm-hmm. And yep. I'd like to know, how did you get involved in that space?
So I guess it started like early 2021. This was back when like I didn't really know what Web3 was or NFTs were. I heard of them and I'd seen them a bit in the news. But then I'd been following Gary Vaynerchuk for a few years and, you know, he inspired me. And I kind of saw that he was saying, be prepared for something that's coming in the next month, you know. So that was like an NFT project. And he said, set up your wallet and get some cryptocurrency. And I'd never done any of that before. So I kind of said, oh, I'll give it a shot and I'll just be ready anyway and see what happens. And then it came to a point where he released the details and he was actually holding this business conference for 3 years. It was a multi-day one. And he said that he was going to try and make it one of the best business conferences ever. And he's going to use all his contacts and connections to kind of put that together. And so I thought the pricing was quite appropriate for what I was going to get. So I decided to jump in and I kind of looked at it at a bit of a face value, like, oh yeah, just an easy exchange. But it was only after that I kind of realized the value of NFTs and like his relationship with his community was. So like it was like connecting his personal brand with the NFT owners, and like the price really went up and I was like in shock. So that kind of really piqued my interest, and I really wanted to find out more about NFTs because I could see the power of them and where the future was potentially going to go. So yeah, that's kind of set me on a path down a rabbit hole. And ever since I've just been kind of diving into all that. So yeah.
Nice. So Gary Vee was your entry point into NFTs. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
But one of the things that actually stuck out to me about your profile is your background is in engineering. And mm-hmm. It looks like you recently made a career change as well into business and finance. Is that right?
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Just brought
in. Yeah. But then, if I'm correct as well, maybe you left that job in business and finance to become an independent content creator, which if that's the case, that's an admirable career choice, man. Something that a lot of people in our audience would love to replicate and be able to accomplish. Could you tell us, how did you make the decision to become a full-time content creator?
Right. So I guess, you know, that decision started a long time ago. It was kind of me just having a general interest in tech and content creation and, you know, filming and that sort of stuff. So it always piqued my interest. And I was always like, oh, I kind of want to do something like that, you know, just like around business or what I know. And then it kind of, at that time, just before I left my job, I wasn't really fulfilled. So I thought maybe I'll take a break. And I had an idea for some project that I was going to do. But then I saw the success of Vee Friends from Gary Vee. And essentially that kind of took all my attention, and I decided, oh, why don't I make content around NFTs, right? I don't see too many people doing it. So that kind of took me in that direction. And, you know, before that, I wasn't really a social media person. Like, I could count on my hand the amount of times that I actually posted. But fortunately, you know, I was okay with editing and filming and that sort of stuff. So that stuff was easy. But the other things, that was a challenge, but definitely one that I was happy taking that path down. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it, right? It was just an idea in my head, but spontaneously stumbled into it. So yeah.
Yeah, but I think it takes a lot of like commitment, or maybe bravery is the word, to decide like, yeah, I'm going to give up my 9-to-5 steady income and make videos. Where did you get like, I think the word I'm looking for is audacity. Where did you get the audacity to make that shift?
Well, you know, I really just wanted to try something different. And, you know, I thought I could potentially do a good job. And, you know, I wanted something that was quite different to 9-to-5. You know, I could control my narrative, my working hours, and then kind of just develop interesting things and do projects that I was genuinely passionate about, and that could be fluid and I could change. And yeah, so it was kind of just, you know, you get to a point where it's building slowly, and then it goes really fast, and you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna do this, I'm just gonna make that decision, make the leap. So yeah.
Nice. And no turning back now?
No, never.
excellent. Excellent. So let's talk about it a bit. I know one of the main goals that you have for your content is to build a community. And yes. I think you're currently building that community on Discord, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And for us in the creator economy, I think a lot of us are beginning to understand the importance of having a community and directing our audience towards community platforms that we control, like mm-hmm. Discord. But also for a lot of creators, this whole concept of controlling your community platform is still quite new. And maybe I can get you, can you explain to the listeners just what's the importance of being able to control your communications channel with the audience, and specifically, like, why is Discord a great platform for this purpose?
Okay. So I think for me personally, the ultimate goal is building a community and having like a two-way conversation with them. So I think there's a lot of platforms out there that force you to engage in particular ways, and there's a lot of constraints around that. And it's usually one way, and it's very transactional. So I want to create content or draw people from different social platforms to a space where we can have that two-way conversation, where it's organic. It's not this 15-second video and you have to type back to me in like a 160-character response type thing. So it's just, you can speak to me directly. We can hop on a voice chat. And I've done that with some of my community, you know. We actually have a genuine conversation. So for me, it's about pulling people in and then kind of building that community organically. And having that direct control, you kind of can gain a bit more insight into who your community is and connect with them on a personal level. So, you know, the success I've seen from it, you know, people have reached out and shared their stories that I probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And, you know, I've gotten a bit of insight into their heart and had a bit of fun with them. And, you know, we're starting to become like a friends and, you know, a bit of a community. So at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to building a community so they stay there, and having a relationship with those people. So it's not just a transactional piece of content.
Nice. That's cool, man. And you know what? One thing that you said that connected with me just now is about the character limit when you're responding to people on some of these social media platforms. That, I think, is one of the reasons why I got into podcasting. You know, I think like this conversation that we're having now, we couldn't have this on Twitter or Instagram or LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's right. There's
no space for an hour-long discourse between two people. I think that's a major part of it, right? It's about just being able to put yourself in an environment, in an atmosphere where you're able to have these dialogues and just sort of like grow with each other. Am I right on that?
Yeah, no, that's hitting the nail on the head, 100%. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And so for on your main platform, I think, is YouTube. And I know that you've had just a tremendous amount of growth on for that channel. Mm-hmm. And you've actually found ways to begin monetizing your efforts while your channel is still less than a year old. So congratulations to you. Kudos to you. Yeah, that's amazing. I know a lot of that growth, a lot of that audience growth comes from being able to drive awareness to the channel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're obviously pretty good at it. So can you speak directly to some of the digital creators who are in the audience and sort of share maybe a bit of your strategies, your techniques, the tactics that you use to drive awareness?
Okay. So I guess, you know, I probably have like a multi-layered approach, and probably the easy stuff is just learning how the algorithm works and just posting quantity and consistency, right? So just posting frequently enough so people don't forget who you are, and posting at like similar times or when your audience is around, so it's served up to them just at the perfect moment. So just getting the basics down, and then probably a step up from that, you just want to make sure that you actually branch out to different social channels, and you have like a specific call to action. Maybe that's driving them back to your base, right? Because like for me, YouTube, my value, I think, is in longer form videos rather than like a 30-second TikTok or an Instagram post. Like, you know, I probably can't do that as well as I can on YouTube. So whether that's your blog or even if TikTok's your main platform, maybe driving them to the right place. So having that awareness on different channels can kind of pull people to where you want them to be. Not everyone uses every single social platform. So sometimes it can create that link between them. So, and then the last one I would say, which is the most important, is probably always to focus on the impact that you can make. So if someone's consuming this content, make sure that they get the most out of it, the biggest impact. So it actually leaves an impression on them, and they kind of think of you and you stay in their mind for longer, because there's so much content out there these days. So, and you know, you can go with just the generic trend or whatever, but I find that actually going a bit deeper and getting an impact for your audience is what makes them stick around and want to find out more about who you are or where else they can get content from you. So that's what I found success from. And, you know, even my community has relayed that back to me, you know, in chats that we had, that, you know, I had no clue about, you know, Web3 or the NFT space, and your content's really helped me. And yeah, now they actually recommend me to their friends or whatever. So word of mouth also, it just happens organically, right? So that's what impact can do. So I think that's above all, impact's the biggest thing.
Yeah, you mentioned this a bit, but let me ask the question so I can get you to touch on it specifically. So there, like you said, there's lots of content out there, right? And when you started, like in 2021, there weren't many YouTube channels that were talking about NFTs, but now NFTs everywhere, and they're like daily channels, right? Daily podcasts and daily YouTube channels that are dedicated just to NFTs. So, but you continue to grow, and you continue to be at the head of the pack. So what are you doing that allows you to separate yourself, to be unique from all of the other content providers that are out there?
So I think it's also, like, for me personally, you know, it's a lot of it is investment or education on specific topics. And I know an easy way to grow in the space is a new project comes out, and you can pump that project, and, you know, it'll get a lot of views because it has the attention of a lot of people. But I find that if you take a step back maybe, and you see where people aren't filling the gaps, you know, and you kind of find a spot that you can contribute value to, or there's a side that's not being discussed or talked about, you know, you're not just following the latest trends. You're trying to think ahead of what more could people potentially get from your content, right? So it's easy to just follow what's happening now, but sometimes you want to, maybe you can do a bit of both, but I think I'm trying to find other content and other ways to target more niche categories where it's a little bit undersaturated is sometimes better.
So, like, in terms of getting the ideas for like the individual topics that you're going to talk about, mm-hmm. In your show, where do you get inspiration? Where do the ideas come from?
There's a few areas, right? I guess, you know, I do a lot of maybe social listening, or like looking at like particular opinions on social media about certain topics. So I go through a lot of big accounts, comments, or just posts, and I kind of look at what are people asking? What are they talking about? Why do they care? And maybe sometimes I'll prompt them with a question like, oh yeah, can you give me a bit more insight into why you think that? Or I'll speak directly with, you know, my community. But I think, you know, when you listen to, or when you look at particular social platforms and like social listen, I think you can get a lot of insight sometimes from that. Or yeah. I think I look through other content creators or just on my normal YouTube feed, and I say, well, what's actually missing? And, you know, is there any gaps here with the recent news or particular projects that no one's covering that I think are kind of cool? So it's really a mix. And then I think more into the future, I'll probably start doing polls, you know, so I say, hey, this is what I was thinking. Can I gain your interest in what you kind of want to see from me? And that's a really easy way for people to just click a button, and then you can kind of get a gauge on where people's interest lies. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay, so you're using polls. That's a good example. Yeah, I've seen some people using polls really successfully on LinkedIn. So are you using these polls in Discord?
Yeah, so I will use them in Discord. I was using them in a Telegram for a bit. Okay. So, and that was pretty good. Just to see, you know, kind of which areas. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so tell me then, so when you're having these conversations with your audience and your community, from a content creation standpoint, from like a time management standpoint, how much effort has to go into managing this community?
It's tough, right? You know, it's still like my community is still relatively small compared to like some other ones, but I think you just, it does, you know, it's like finding little gaps in the day, right? So, and just trying to keep the conversation stimulated, or trying to post some information there. But I think you'll find that if you build a good community, people will start to even want to support you. Like, you know, one of my community members reached out to me and said, you've helped me a lot. I really like what you've done in the space. Can I help you out? And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like I've really needed help. So yeah, please. And then that kind of organic assistance from the community, right? So it's not just like a one-way relationship. We're all kind of trying to help each other out. So you're building something that's kind of bigger than you. So if you create a good foundation, eventually the community will take care of itself, is my hope, right? And I feel like that's where it's going anyway, but yeah.
I like that. So do you have any specific strategies that you're using to actually continue to build this community and be able to tease out those types of followers who are going to be helping to support you along the way?
I guess, you know, so it was like, you know, when you drive awareness, it's making the call to action, join my community to find a bit more. And then when they come in, it's making them feel welcomed, and, you know, speaking with them if they have any thoughts or whatever. You're just making sure that you're always trying to, especially in the early stages, it's really important to like respond to everyone and kind of not just leave it as a dead conversation. Or even like do some thought provoking stuff, or just, I try to ask a lot of questions, and sometimes they don't get answered, but it's more just like trying to thought provokers to see if anyone wants to jump into the conversation. So it is quite a challenge, and I haven't mastered it. I'm still trying to figure it all out, but, it's definitely a fun process, and yeah, I'm enjoying it.
No, I get that 100%, because a lot of communication is just about meeting people where they're at that moment in their life, right? And sometimes they may not be in a position to sort of say, hey, this is where I am, I need help, or I want to have this conversation, because they don't know how people are going to respond.
That's right.
So coming along as like the leader of the organization, you're putting yourself out there in the forefront and saying, hey, here's this possible conversation we can have, guys. Is anyone interested in talking about it? And maybe some people jump on and you can have a conversation and create a relationship, but maybe not. But then, but you're the one who's like driving the initiative. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you very much have to be at the beginning, right? Because I think, you know, you jump into a new group or a community, you're kind of just sitting on the sidelines, kind of watching, seeing what this group's about and whether or not I want to participate. So you got to make people want to participate and feel rewarded and welcomed for participating. So it's hard to give like a defined rule book for that sort of stuff. It's just like, you got to figure out and be a bit organic with it and just try new things, I guess.
No, yeah, for sure. And you're obviously doing a really great job at it. Okay, so let me ask you this question now as we start to wrap up this conversation a bit. Mm-hmm. So I know this question I think is going to be for the NFT fans in our audience, right? And I know you have some thoughts on sort of the future of NFTs. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can share with us a little bit about what you think the new trends in NFTs will be in 2022.
Okay. So I guess NFT trends in 2022. I think last time we spoke, I said I was thinking maybe streetwear, NFTs, and access. And, you know, since that conversation, I think I've seen, the Bathing Ape, Bape, and they've, that's like an OG streetwear brand that's been around for 20 plus years. And they've come out and, you know, we've also seen other fashion brands like Nike, Adidas, Prada. And there's multiple others, but I think we're already seeing this trend starting to happen. And that they were kind of like the test case, right? For other brands to kind of watch, see what they did, learn and, learn from their failures. And then I think they're going to launch their own thing because they've seen the success that it's had and potentially how they can connect with their communities and give value back to the people that support them, right? So the reason I think, you know, streetwear or fashion is just because they kind of align with NFT so that, you know, holding that NFT could give you access to exclusive clothing, you know, frontline access, reduced discounts, free merchandise. So that sort of stuff, right? It's finding how can someone benefit from that, owning that NFT and being in that ecosystem. So I really think that matches up well. And then probably the next trend is access. So I've already seen Australian Open, Super Bowl and Coachella launching NFTs. So Australian Open was like selling tennis balls used at the at Australian Open. And they kind of tied that in with the data that they have on court and captured those moments based on the NFT or the ball that you had associated with it. And then it's really cool. And then you have like Coachella, which is like one of the biggest entertainment brands, you know, in the world. And they're kind of giving these 10 exclusive lifetime Coachella passes. So you get VIP access and, you know, all these other rewards that I guess money can't really buy. It's you know, you're going to get access to things that nobody else could ever get. So that just shows like how an NFT can really change the interaction between a brand and give you access to something that other people just will never get. So that was cool. And then, and then lastly was just the Super Bowl where they're giving like a piece of digital memorabilia, right? An NFT to everyone to go. So I was like, this is just like other ways that I think brands are going to start integrating NFTs into their strategy. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what else people do with NFTs. But I think those are kind of my ones that I'm keeping my eye out for.
Yeah, I heard about the NFL. Didn't hear about the Australian Open. That sounds super cool. If they're tying the actual match data to the ball, to the specific ball.
So you
get that to walk away with. I have a friend who's working on something similar where you buy an NFT that is from a particular athlete and it's tied to a specific moment in that athlete's life.
Ooh,
and then you can add to those moments as well. Like there are ways to update the NFT where you add your own similar moments to theirs. And so it becomes this sort of like a living leisure
that's cool. I like that.
Pass on to like your son and whoever. Mm. So you're all sort of connected with this athlete and these memories that pass through, or maybe from a team. And you know how you pass your team on to your kids?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That way you sort of do it with the NFT.
That's cool. I love that concept. And, you know, it's like innovative stuff like that, you know, you haven't really seen before or even thought of sometimes. And it's like, wow, that's kind of cool. It makes sense. I could see myself doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the question that I always have for these NFT projects is, what's the longevity? And so I'm asking you, like, do you see these like when the NFL is giving NFTs or the Australian Open, just at face value, it may seem like a one-off event. Do you see that there's some longevity in sort of having these initiatives and buying into these NFTs?
I definitely think that there is long-term value. You know, sometimes it's hard to see that initially because, you know, and you just get an NFL ticket as an NFT, like, cool. Yeah. That's something cool, but like, you know, I don't really care for it. And then later the next year, maybe they say, oh, if you own that NFT, well, you go into maybe the raffle to win a free ticket this year. And then all of a sudden that kind of is an added value that, you didn't expect, right? Or, you know, I've seen other brands where you just holding that NFT, well, they're like, now we're giving you this free t-shirt or something, or now you get access to this next project that we're doing. And they're just finding new ways to create value for the initial supporters and holders of those NFTs, right? So I think it's not like a physical ticket where you lose it. It's on the blockchain, so you know it's always going to stay there, and it's always tied to you. So right, just having that digital security of it will always allow those brands to find ways that they can potentially add value to you, whether that's in like 1 month, 1 year, 10 years type thing. So I see it being as a long term thing. You know, if it's cheap enough or it's accessible that you're happy to spend that money, I would say do it if it's a brand that you really love. Like, if I started a brand 20 years ago and I gave them an NFT, well, and I'm really successful today, I'll be like, oh, well, anyone who's still holding that original NFT that, you know, essentially really helped me start my business, well, here's all this stuff that I can potentially give you in return, right? To thank you for your support. So that's how I see brands interacting with their original, investors, I guess, in the future.
Okay, I like that. Yeah, 20 years, definitely. That's a long time. If you're that successful, then it'd be really great to be able to give back. But let's talk about it in the short term then. I know there are a lot of people who are absolutely against selling NFTs. And I've heard somebody make the analogy like, hey, if you buy a brand new iPhone 13, do you turn around and sell it, you know, a month from now? No, like you keep it. Most people keep their phones. Most people don't like sell their phones before it's time to get another one. So why would you sell, you know, sort of buy NFTs for the purpose of selling them? Where do you sit on in terms of that spectrum? Are you selling NFTs or buying and holding?
So I guess I have a mixed portfolio in terms of that. So like most of the time I'm buying and I'm holding. Like I don't really sell projects I believe in too much. But if I'm going to sell something in the short term, it's more like, oh, that entry point or the entry price is quite attractive, right? So I'm happy to buy it at this price. And then it gets to a certain value where I look at it and I say, would I actually pay that amount now to buy it? If it increased by, you know, from $500 to $5,000, I said, okay, would I buy that for $5,000 today? And if I say no to myself, I say it's probably a good time to pass that on to somebody else who values it like that much, right? So if they want to pay $5,000 for it, they can. They see a value that I don't. So that's why I would personally sell in the short term. But if you believe that you're going to get more value out of it, in a longer horizon, I would hold. That's my view.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense too. I think another way of looking at it might be, you know, all of these NFTs are built on a particular blockchain. And so you sort of want one thing that I've heard people doing, say, you look at the price at it as it is now. And if you think, you know, over a certain particular time period, if the price of the coin that the token is on, if the price of the coin or token is on, is probably going to go higher than the price of the actual token, then, yep, then maybe it makes sense to sell and go back into the token rather than holding the NFT, because then you get more value that way. That makes sense to you?
Definitely. And you know, there's two sides of it, right? There's going to be people who want to use NFTs for utility or access or status. And then there's going to be people who maybe also want that, but they're more trying to figure out a way to make money and, you know, use it for investment purposes. So I think, you know, depending on where you sit on that line, you're going to have like very different strategies or ideals for what you think you should do, right? So.
Nice. Yeah, for sure. Well, Aldridge, it was amazing having you here on the show. I know that the audience, the digital creators in our audience, got a ton of value out of this conversation. I know that the NFT fans in the audience got a ton of value out of this conversation. I really enjoy talking with you. And I'm sure that there are people who would love to be able to connect with you afterwards, maybe reach out to you on social media or jump into your Discord channel or follow you on YouTube. What are the best ways for people to reach you?
So I guess, you know, probably the best way to connect with me directly would be to join my Discord. That's probably where we can have a deeper conversation and kind of find where you need to go, especially if you're new or you're a bit more advanced. So I would recommend my Discord channel. But if you don't like Discord or you don't use it, you know, you can follow me on any of my other socials, probably YouTube. And then you can either just direct message me or whatever, and we can go from there. But Discord is probably where I add the most value and where I share more than what I do on my other platforms. So,
Great. Yeah, so for everyone listening, if you're listening now, you made it to the end of the show. If you check the episode description, we've got links to Aldridge's Discord and his YouTube. So be sure to go ahead and check those out. Follow him, subscribe, join the Discord channel. Aldridge, it was amazing having you, brother. Really, thank you very much for joining us and just delivering value to everyone, man.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed talking.